Hi everyone, this is Catherine, and I am here with one of my besties today, my dear friend Deborah Poneman. Hi Deborah.
Hello, Kath. So happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you, and I know everyone's excited that you're here, and particularly excited about the topic, sharing your story in heart-opening, compelling, and wildly inspiring ways. And everyone, I just want to kind of formally introduce my dear friend Deborah to you. Deborah, I have to tell you, I laughed at your bio that you sent over because it's so humble. I'm gonna read your very understated bio, and then I have to just tell a little bit on you. But for over 35 years, Deborah, who is a best-selling author and founder of the Yes to Success seminars and the co-founder of Your Year of Miracles mentoring program for women, has been sharing her system, and it's now used by tens of thousands of people in all corners of the world to create lives that are filled with success, abundance, fulfillment, profound self-love, and miracles. Deborah is known as the mentor of mentors, and her students have taken her teachings and become mega successful entrepreneurs, renowned transformational leaders, and New York Times bestselling authors. Many have become millionaires or billionaires, some even household names, but Deborah's greatest gift is her belief in each person's magnificence and her ability to convey that belief to activate in her audiences profound and lasting transformation. You know, when I read that, I think you really got the golden nuggets in there. But I want to name drop a little bit, because some people that you know, we all look like they're on the A-plus list, the mountaintop, were actually your students. Because you really started this conversation, you know. And so everyone, Deborah's Yes to Success seminars began, was it the early 80s? Was that when you started, Deborah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she got, you know, she meditated for years. This is my version of your story. She meditated for years, and then she got up off the cushion and she downloaded and created these beautiful teachings that she created Yes to Success seminars with. They were spreading globally before the internet was created. So she was out there, she was teaching people, and Deepak Chopra was one of her students. Marcy Shimoff was her secretary. Janet Atwood was her student. You know, all these people who went on and really changed the world in big ways. And the reason you don't know Deborah Poneman's name is probably because when she had her baby, she decided that it was more important for her to stay home and love her two children than to be running around the world teaching Yes to Success. So she gave her teachings away and blessed everybody to go out and be successful with them. So you are one of my heroines on the planet, and your comeback has been profound. And now everybody's starting to know your name, and you are already a best-selling author, and you have thousands of women who are now back in your fold, and that you're, you know, now that your kids are amazing adults in the world, you're back and you're giving your gifts in this way again. And I'm particularly excited about having you here to talk about how you tell a story, because you are really one of the best storytellers I've ever had the privilege of sitting and listening to. And so thank you for creating this. I know you put some extra effort into creating this just for us.
Well, I did, and thank you so much for that introduction. And I have to say that the great thing about taking those 21 years away from my career to be with my kids, I have so many great stories to tell.
Ah, that's so true.
So, all of those things that you
gosh.
Go through, especially with your daughter as a teenager, like you're doing right now, it's all worth it because you have the stories.
That's so true. All right. Well, I'm handing the talking stick over to you now.
I'm going to start with a quote. It's from a little booklet of anonymous quotes from Native American shamans and elders. And the quote goes like this. Tell me a fact, and I'll listen. Tell me a truth, and I'll learn. Tell me a story, and it will live in my heart forever.
Oof.
And that is, isn't that gorgeous?
Oh,
and it's
chills.
So true. Well, right. And as we just pointed out, I started teaching Yes to Success in 1981. And to this day, in fact, it just happened recently at a wedding. So how many years ago was that? 37 years ago, I have people coming up to me and saying, oh, I took your seminar in 1982, and I'll never forget that story about. And they recall some story that I told. There's a story that I told about how I teach people that they should clean out their closets in order to make space. You have to create physical space, room in your life if you want relationships and money and good things to come into your life. It's all often your physical clutter that might be keeping it away. So I teach people that they should clear out the clutter. And I tell the story about how when I lived in New York, my roommate and I, who later became my sister-in-law, how we went in our closets and we each built two huge garbage bags full of clutter, and we wanted them out of our houses, out of our apartment. We did not even want the garbage bags. So we decided we were going to bring them to the Salvation Army, and we were walking down the street with these two big bags full of garbage in each of our hands, or clothing in each of our hands, and we stopped at a restaurant because we were so tired, and we put them in the little coat area. And after we were done eating, we went out, and they were gone. And we were so thrilled because we didn't have to carry them the other quarter mile to the Salvation Army. But the beautiful thing about that story is that it's illustrating that I really do what I teach people to do. And that's so important when you're telling a story. When you're a teacher and you can tell a story that illustrates that you really walk your talk, that you really live your teaching, that's one of the best kinds of stories that you could tell. And I could have said to people, whatever it was, 36 years ago, and I really do clean out my closets. But instead, I told the story, and the visual is so impactful of me and my future sister-in-law walking down the street with these two big bags of clothing. And then the end of the story, after that, I did create space in my life. I got this wonderful job offer from Business Week magazine, and I ended up marrying her brother. So it's a great story about creating space in your life. And So I also want to start out by telling everybody how I began speaking in front of large groups. And it was definitely trial by fire, but it also shows the power of a story. And I was 20 years old. I never had any formal speaker training. So don't think that you have to go to – if your aspiration is to speak in front of a group, don't feel like you have to go to any formal speaker training, because I'll cover the later why you might not want to. But I was never on the speech team or the debate team. Actually, I don't even know if we had a speech or a debate team at my high school. But I was already a teacher of Transcendental Meditation, or TM as it's known around the world. I was 20 years old. I was teaching out of the Chicago TM Center, and the founder of TM, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, was coming to Chicago, and he was doing this big presentation in the ballroom of the Ambassador West Hotel. They asked me to be the MC. I said yes, and then I get the call, we're waiting for him to arrive, that he was going to be 45 minutes late, and he wanted me to go ahead and to speak for those 45 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
And when
no time to plan.
You pretty much do it. And
wow,
here's what I did. I walked out on the stage. I welcomed the ballroom full of people. And I told stories. I told the story of how I started meditating, why I decided to become a TM teacher. I shared stories about my experiences with Maharishi. I shared amusing anecdotes and interesting things he had said and done. And everyone loved it so much that I think they were almost disappointed when he showed up.
Oh, my gosh.
And here's the key. I could have told them about the research on TM. I could have pulled out the graphs and the charts, because I was just asked to speak for 45 minutes. And there were many scientific research studies already having been done on TM at that point. But what I knew in my heart was that people remember stories. as that Native American quote goes, tell me a story and it will live in my heart forever. Stories stick. And that's why, by the way, we use testimonials in marketing and selling. A good testimonial is actually a short story. I was in an unhappy relationship. I started being coached by Layla Reyes. She taught me how to love myself. I had the strength to leave. And now I'm happier than I've ever been before. Boom. You just told a story in less than two lines of copy. In speakers, if you can create and share good stories, you have a powerful advantage over other people. And the advantage is people will remember you. So I have already modeled for you how to tell a story. It's simply using words to create pictures in the mind of your audience without too much detail. You don't want detail overload, but it has to substantiate and validate your point. My point was that people remember stories. I told you the story about the garbage bags, and in your mind, you could see me walking down the street. You could see me emptying my closet. You could see my friend and I coming to the coat area and seeing our bags gone and being really happy about it. And you also will never forget that I was 20 years old. I was a meditation teacher. My guru came late. I stood in front of a packed ballroom at the Ambassador Hotel in Chicago, and I told stories. No facts, no figures, but it absolutely proves the power of a story. So now you just need to know how to tell a story so that people are mesmerized rather than multitasking, looking at their phones or their watches. And it doesn't mean that your whole talk should necessarily be just stories, but you always want a few well-placed stories to substantiate, to bring home, to embed in people's minds and their hearts each of your main points. So before you start creating any talk, and it could be an online talk, it could be from the stage, it could even be a quote-unquote talk that you're just giving to one personal client. So here's the first thing you could write down. Be very clear about what the message is that you want to convey. Know what the essence is of your talk. What is the action that you want people to take? What do you want people to go home with? And then think of your very best story or stories to support that message. And remember, if you're on the physical stage or the virtual stage speaking to 10 people or 10,000 people or one person, you are the expert. You are the authority. In fact, you are even the hero, and people want to know more about you and your hero's journey. When you go to an event and somebody's on the stage, even if only 10 people show up to the event, you have this degree of respect for the speaker. You trust them. They've been hired, and you want to know more about them. So don't ever think your story is insignificant or that you are insignificant. People want to hear your story. You're the authority. You're up on the stage. So give people your story because that's what they want to hear. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take about 20 minutes, I hope that's okay, to give you pointers on how to tell a great story. And I'm going to throw in a few bonus pointers. Do some people want to speak from the stage?
There are people who want to do speaking and who are doing speaking from the stage. Can you hear me?
Not me. I heard you say there are people who want to.
So can you hear me now?
Yeah. You said there are people who want to.
Yeah. So there are people who want to do events, like free events, around calling in the one or around conscious uncoupling, and part of that is telling their story, and they're doing it to get interest in a group that they're leading, or they're doing it to bring in private clients. Most people
and
here. Yeah.
That's what I thought, and I knew that they were, but I just wanted to make sure that it's okay if I throw in a couple little bonus pointers on how to speak from the stage. Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then at the end, I'm going to ask a few brave souls, a brave soul or two, to volunteer to tell their stories. And I will lovingly critique them. Okay. So now, here's the thing. Think about this, guys. Have you ever been to a talk where the speaker was funny and entertaining and they put on a show that rivaled a three-ring circus? Maybe the speaker jumped up and down and they had funny jokes on slides and you got all worked up. And maybe you jumped up and down, but at the end, you didn't remember anything they said. You didn't take one note. There were no takeaways. That is a legitimate speaking style, but that's not how you want to speak. Don't feel that you have to be an entertainer. If you want to truly engender lasting change, here's another speaking style. It's a speaking style that touches people on a deep level, that moves people, that inspires people to think more deeply, to look more deeply into their own souls. There's a speaking style that inspires people to take action to move their life ahead, even if the action is just a small step. There are speakers who awaken you to new possibilities, and I believe that that is the speaking style that you want to adopt. And that doesn't mean that you can't throw in a bit of humor, but it's not a performance. It's you being you. And you know this, but I'm going to tell you it with absolute certainty. All you need to do is be real. You sharing what you believe matters, letting people see your vulnerability, your humanity. However, you don't want to get into being a victim. That is not, you don't want people to feel sorry for yourself. You want them to see your humanity. Okay? There's a big difference there. Okay? And once they see your humanity, then what you can do is you can more effectively touch their hearts. If you're not vulnerable, if you're not real, then you are not going to open your hearts, their hearts. Okay? I had my heart broken too, and I came out alive. That old Zig Ziglar style, bless his heart, of throwing yourself around the stage and working people into a frenzy, Audiences in 2018 want real. They want authentic feeling. They don't want gimmicks. If you sound scripted, people won't want what you're offering. Don't think you have to be perfect. People in 2018 do not want perfect. They want to see you cry authentic tears. If you're perfect, it's not transformational. It's a performance. And the best way to be real is to share your story with emotion. And the most effective stories are usually the most ordinary ones. An everyday person having an everyday life experience. But if it highlights a struggle or a challenge that you overcame, all the better. Okay? I mean, think about this. Very few people want to hear the story, the details of the time that you brought your kids to take a tour of, I don't know, of NASA, okay? And, ooh, and they're really cool command center dashboards. No, but everyone will be mesmerized when you tell the story about the time that your heart was broken and you were in a Starbucks by yourself and you were sitting at a table and the tears began to flow. And the little five-year-old boy from the table next to you saw you and got out of his chair and came over and put his head on your knee and told you not to be sad. It will be okay.
See, that just brought tears to my eyes. What is that? What did you just do? That's what I'm telling you. Everybody, she's magical like this. Because you're speaking from your heart when you say it. And you're speaking with deep conviction. And you're giving the details that are most touching and most emotionally moving.
And the thing is, Kath, that happened to Janet. Janet told me a story about something happened, and she went, she was in Denmark, she went down to a coffee shop, and she was literally like bent over crying, and a little child came over and put their head on her back and their arms around her and said,
"Oh my gosh,
be okay." And here's the thing, look for those stories. Look for those stories and repeat those stories. Those stories of humanity. Those stories that physically you could feel your heart opening. And the other thing about your story is, even if it's good if it's about you, but even if it's about somebody else, there should always be a takeaway, a point, a lesson. You can't just tell a story that leaves people with the, "And then I went to the Starbucks and I was crying." No, that's not a story. There has to be closure. Or then my husband left me and I was, and I never thought that I would be able to rise again. No, that's not a story. There has to be, you have to have closure. And I'll tell you another story. Our dear mutual friend, Peggy O'Neill, who happens to be a little person, she tells a story about how she's a professional speaker, and her very first big talk that she got, she was so nervous that right before, and she's 3'8", and right before she was about to give her talk, she had to go to the bathroom one more time, and she went into the bathroom. And when she went to leave the bathroom, she went to reach for the handle to get out of the bathroom. It was too tall for her.
Oh,
and she couldn't
reach
it. And she heard them introducing her and reading her bio.
Oh, my gosh.
And everybody was in the room. And she's pounding on the door. "Help me, help me, help me." And then finally somebody came, and she got in, and she said that it was the best talk she ever gave because she told about what just happened. And is there any better story to illustrate? And her talk is about accepting people with differences. And then she ended her story, instead of everybody feeling sorry for her, she said, "So before I continue my talk, I just want you to know that it is not a small, small world after all."
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And she made everybody laugh because she didn't want to leave them with, "Oh, my God, poor pathetic Peggy. She couldn't get out of the bathroom." So she lightened the atmosphere, saying,
"Wow.
Ones that you want to take note of." And then, of course, our friend, our dear mutual friend Peggy, has created an amazing life for herself, but it's not without struggle because it's not a small, small world after all. Okay, so here's the thing. When you tell your story, you need to know what point you're emphasizing with your story. If it's the story of how you became a Calling in the Wand or a Conscious Uncoupling coach, or about your own heartbreak, that's great. But again, and this is a big but, it can't be the story of your heartbreak without closure and a lesson learned that you're now sharing. And I'm going to repeat that again. It can't be the story of your heartbreak without closure and a lesson learned that you're not sharing. If you just tell about the heartbreak of your divorce and you leave it unresolved, it will only serve to make people want to distance themselves from you because now you've made them uncomfortable. So if you're in a group of, maybe you're a speaker at the local women's club and you talk about great concepts of conscious uncoupling, but if you don't, if you tell your story and it's like, "Oh God," and you don't put closure on it, you're going to make people very uncomfortable. The other thing that you don't want to do, as long as we're being clear about this, is when you tell your story, and you know this, but it is, even if you had the worst ex-husband or ex-wife in the world, This is not therapy. When you're in front of the group, it's not to show how horrible your ex is. It can be how horrible the divorce process was for you. Not too many details, please. Again, it's not therapy. But it has to be how you came out a victor. Okay? Also, you also have to ask yourself this, and I'm going to go back to that in a second, but this is really important also. You have to ask yourself, who is my audience? And you have to know who your audience is so that you could speak to their listening. When you are talking to a group full of women whose average net worth is, you know, millions of dollars, you are going to choose different stories than if you're talking to a group of working class women or women who are on welfare. So you have to match your story to your audience. Remember this. You have to be relatable. You have to dress to your audience. You know, don't come with your St. John jacket if you're talking to women who are just, you know, getting out of rehab or halfway houses or whatever. I was at an event recently which is filled with working class people who were definitely the spiritual transformational crowd, and the speaker was telling a story about what happened to her when her mom died, and I am not kidding. She said, so I had to fly home right, and this is to a group of working class women. I had to fly right home from Europe where I was staying at my friend's villa, and everything went wrong. You know, I ran into the duty-free shop, and this is absolute true. I ran into the duty-free shop on my way to my flight to buy my family a lot of liquor. And since I always fly first class, I figured they would hand me my duty-free purchases. And I walked on the plane, and they lost them. And I'm talking about $1,000 of duty-free purchases.
Oh, my gosh.
It was so painful. But, guys, audience awareness. You are not going to get clients if you are – you get the picture. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so audience awareness. And now you also want to make sure – another very, very important point – that your best stories are not aggrandizing you. You could be the hero, but here's the thing. If you want those people to be your clients, if you want to bring these people into the calling and the one and conscious uncoupling family, you have to make them feel good about themselves. It's not you that you're trying to make them feel good about. It's themselves. So you might be thinking, well, how can I make someone else feel good about themselves if the story is about me? Okay? It's a good point.
Yeah.
I'm going to share with you a story about how I just did that recently. All right? Quick story.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to a group called the Art of Living Foundation. I'm a teacher in Art of Living. And I was at this celebration called Guru Purnima. It's the day in honor of the guru. And there were 4,000 people. It was down in San Jose, and the guru asked me if I would get up on stage and share a story. Okay, so I get up on stage, and I share this story, and I'll share it with you very briefly. I said this. I said I was with another, I was teaching meditation through another organization for about 20 years. Years when I realized that it was not a home for me anymore. There were just some things that seemed a little bit off and I couldn't say in good conscience. And that was when I found Art of Living. And I loved it because not only did I love the technique, but I love the people. I love the openness. I love that there was equality. You could be gay, you could be straight, you could be a woman, you could be, we were all in leadership positions. But I did not want to surrender my heart to a guru, because I had been disappointed before, and I was very, very hurt, and I didn't want to be hurt again. And one day, I went and I met Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. I thought, what a lovely person, but I don't want to have another guru, because I was protecting my heart. And because I became a TM teacher when I was 19 years old, and it had led to some disappointment. I said, and then one day, it was this holiday called Mahalakshmi, okay, and it's a celebration of wealth and prosperity and true wealth for all. And I went to some local meditation center, and they were doing this ceremony to the goddess Lakshmi. And I was watching people how devoted they were to their guru. And I thought, you know what? I miss that. I miss being devoted to my guru. I miss having that, because I love that tradition. I missed having that love for a guru in my heart. So I just prayed. I said to God, God, show me. If I'm supposed to go back to the TM movement, I'll go. If my guru is supposed to be Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, I surrender. If it's supposed to be the guru whose ashram I'm at right now, just give me a clear sign. And I went home, and I went to sleep. And the next morning, I was asleep, 7 o'clock in the morning, and the phone rang. And my husband answered it, and he said, he hands it to me. He says, some Indian lady wants to talk to you. And I say, hello. And it was Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, who's the head of the Art of Living. And he says, and you needed to speak to me?
Oh.
And I said, well, I guess not anymore. And he said, very good then. Jai Gurudev, which means all glory to the teacher inside of you. Jai Gurudev. And, okay, so you may think, how could I make that into a story about anybody but me? But people don't get moved by, yeah, oh my gosh, he called you, and he did, and it's pretty cool. And the next morning, somebody from the ashram called me and said, what happened last night? At 8 o'clock, Sri Sri stopped the ceremony and said, Deborah Poneman needs to talk to me. And it was the exact same time I said that prayer. Very cool story. And he was in Montreal, and I was in Chicago. But I said this. I said, and yes, it's very cool that he called me. And then I said to the 4,000 people, but he called every single one of you. It was just a little harder with me because I had been hurt before. So he needed to call me by telephone. But if he hadn't called you, you wouldn't be here today. And afterward, there were a whole bunch of people who shared their guru story. But I was the one that everybody came up to and said, oh my gosh. Because again, I didn't make myself feel good. I made them feel good about themselves.
Wow.
You see the difference?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know, so, there's something about that I just want to make transparent too, that when you're speaking, your heart is really with people. Your heart is like jumping out at everyone. I mean, I'd be interested in hearing people's experience of this. But there's something about how in your heart you are that allows us to drop into our hearts, that the listener, that so you're opening hearts almost like a transmission because you're so in your own heart. I just wanted to acknowledge you for that.
And thank you, sweetie, so much. And it is because I really, in my heart, want people's lives to be transformed. And again, every person who is on this phone, you wouldn't be on this call if you also didn't want to contribute to people's lives. You wouldn't be here if you didn't want people to be able to have a conscious uncoupling, if you didn't want people to be able to call in the one. And people will be able to tell if it really, truly is in your heart. And what I'm going to do here, I'm going to make up a story that might be a little bit more relevant, okay, so that people can hear how you might tell a story about, so here we go. So this isn't true, I'm making it up. So now I'm going to tell you my story, which isn't really my story, but there are components. I had been married for 27 years. I had two beautiful teenage girls, both of whom loved their dad. We went on vacations together with our extended families. Ours was a house on the block where all the kids hung out. We were the poster family for Family Beautiful. I'm going to stop here. That was 30 seconds, and you know everything about my life. Perfect model family, two great daughters, they love their dad, beautiful house, all the kids hung out. Okay, three phrases, You don't have to say, oh, and we had a pool, and we had these pool parties, and we had two barbecues, and we had two dogs. One was an Irish setter, and one was a little dachshund. Unfortunately, one died of cancer, and my daughters played soccer, and my older daughter's team won the state championship. People do that. No one cares. Just enough to paint the visual picture of what your life is like. Right, Kath? I mean, you get that, right?
Right.
Okay. So then three phrases. And what happens, and also make sure that the three phrases progress your story and not your ego. When you get into the, you know, the pool and the barbecue and the this, now it's your ego that you're progressing. It's no longer the story. Remember, you are serving your audience. They are not serving you. You are there to make them feel good about themselves, not for them to think, wow, about you. Okay? So the first thing is you set the stage. Next, you build the action. The next thing you say is, I should have seen it coming. When he had emergencies at work, not only did he start coming home later and later, but he even told me that his heart was broken that he couldn't come on our annual vacation to Cabo with us. Even every year we had our family reunion, and his heart was broken that he couldn't come with us. Okay, so you're building the action now, and then there's always the thing that happened, which we call in storytelling the climax. The climax. and then came the fires in Sonoma and the evacuation order that happened in a split second. And when he was supposed to be at his office, all the neighbors saw him evacuating in a split second with the mom from my daughter's soccer team whose husband had recently died of pancreatic cancer. Ouch. So a lot of people, they think that that's a story. That's not a story. That's the climax. Now you have to bring it home. If the whole neighborhood hadn't seen them half naked running out of the house, I would have bought into his story that she was there helping him in case he had to evacuate. And then you have to tell how it made you feel. I was devastated. I not only lost my husband, but my home in one night. I never thought I'd bounce back. See, now you have to say the things about your story that people could relate to. I never thought I'd bounce back, let alone be standing here in front of you today. And that's a great line, because I think a lot of you have stories that I never thought I'd bounce back, let alone be standing. It makes me cry because I'm feeling your hearts right now. And let alone standing here in front of you today. And you could let the tears flow if they're real tears. And I think they will be at this point. But guess what? I am standing here. And not only am I standing here, but thanks to the teachings of Catherine Woodward Thomas and conscious uncoupling, my husband and I uncoupled with mutual respect, goodwill, generosity, minimal damage to our children, and because of these teachings, I was spared the karma of needing to seek revenge and needing to make him suffer. And the biggest gift is that I realized that Family Beautiful had been a facade the entire time that we had all mutually bought into. And I no longer have to be that woman. But what I'm now modeling is true authenticity and the real values that I want my daughters to grow up embodying. So now I'm truly grateful. I am truly grateful that it happened that night of the wildfires, because I lost my home, and I lost my husband, and I gained myself. And this is what I want for you, and I can support you to get there. New deep love for your true beloved, and your true beloved is yourself. Who wouldn't want to sign up for that?
Yeah. Beautiful. Really, really and
everybody
moving.
We all have those stories. And again, what you don't want to do is you don't want to just tell the story of no victimhood here. You see, you share the emotion, but not the unfinished business. Okay? I remember one time I was at a talk where the speaker had suffered some physical abuse at the hands of her brother, and clearly there was unfinished business, and she told the story, but her anger was on top. Her point was that in order to recover from the abuse, you have to forgive the abuser and move on and not condone the action, but she clearly hadn't. So don't tell the story if the situation has not been resolved. Or you could say, and I have to be honest with you, I have not completely resolved the situation myself, but I am so close, and I am 1,000 times closer than I would have been had I not been led to this teaching. So, you know, I'm going to just tell you a few other random pointers. I think that that could kind of suffice, but can I just throw out a few, do I have time to throw out a few more random pointers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, make sure that your story enforces your message. Okay? And again, what I do, and this is the truth, I practice my stories. And people don't realize that I practice my stories because I tell them so effortlessly. The reason why they sound so effortless is because I wrote out every, nothing, that one I just made up. I thought that was really good. But, but my stories, I write them out and I read them over and over and over and over. And every time I do, I refine them. But I read them so many times, and I read them out loud. When you read your story out loud, it's much easier to see the weakness than when you read them, just reading them. You want to speak them out loud over and over and over. But I read them so many times out loud that by the time I tell them in front of an audience, it always sounds like the first time I've ever told them because I own it. It's inside of me. It doesn't sound like something I've memorized because I've read it so many times out loud that I own it, okay? Yeah. Another thing, guys, this is maybe some, it sounds, you know, maybe like out of place, but please, please, please don't name drop. There is nothing that causes you to lose your credibility more quickly than name dropping. There is nothing more transparent that screams, I need your approval, than name dropping for no reason. You want to tell a story. Let's say you want to tell a story about how a woman was. You were at dinner and a woman was contradicting everything her husband said. Great story about how you know, maybe one of the things that you teach is about if you want to call in the wand, don't make the person wrong. Don't make your current partner wrong. If you kind of practice it, if you're looking for a new partner, because nobody wants to be made wrong. But that aside, don't tell the story like, well, I was at this party and there was this couple and the woman just kept correcting the husband. And, you know, I was at a table with Jack Canfield. Oh, and it was crazy cold out and I had this sleeveless dress. So he gave me his jacket. Oh, and Catherine Woodward Thomas was there. And she said to me, wow, that jacket was so good on you. And when the couple started arguing, I thought, well, I can't correct them because hey, John Gray is here, and if he's not going to stop them, well, I'm not going to stop them. Trust me, guys, it does not make you seem cool in any way, shape, or form. It makes you seem needy and kind of pathetic. If you need to talk about somebody in the context of the story, yes, but not random name dropping. And also don't tell stories about awards you've received or successes you've had, again, unless it ends up showing some vulnerability or making a good point. If one of your failures led to success one day, good. If it's good, if it shows your vulnerability. But when a storyteller talks about how great they are, the audience shuts down. The more you celebrate yourself and your accomplishments, the less likely your audience will connect with you and your message. You know, you can say when I was working at a high security prison, I used to work at a high security prison. I didn't work there. I used to go and do the summer camp for women inmates. But I have a friend who also worked there, and she would say, you know, and when I was working at this high security prison, which I won the President's Award for, which is like the highest honor that you can get for doing volunteer work. And then she goes on like, really? It just kind of negated the work that she did at the high security prison. Mm-hmm. What you can do, however, and this is really a great thing to know if you're going to be speaking to any size group, what you can do is say, when I was working at this high security prison, and by the way, my friend Jane, who is in the audience tonight, started the program in the prison and, in fact, won the President's Award for it. Jane, could everybody stand up so everybody could acknowledge you? You just got 10 new clients for doing that for Jane. See the difference?
Yeah.
Right? When you compliment somebody else, there's a word for it which is escaping me right now, your admiration capital goes, you know, 1,000 points up. Another thing is tell the truth. The truth is good enough. Don't exaggerate. If you don't lie, you never have to remember what you said. When people catch you in a lie, you lose their trust. And people can fact check very easily these days. So in these days of integrity, integrity being your greatest capital, be careful about exaggerations. Because you know what happens when you exaggerate or you tell something that isn't the truth? Your energy changes and people are really sensitive to energy these days. I have seen people do this. Please don't do it. Don't start out your talk by saying, I didn't really prepare anything tonight. If you're Deepak Chopra, you can say, I didn't prepare anything tonight, because they will love you if you talk about what kind of dog food you feed your dog. But you, if Deepak Chopra says, I didn't prepare anything tonight, he'll get a response of delighted laughter. If you say, I didn't prepare anything tonight, you know what you get? You get, are you freaking kidding me? I am giving you my time. I took this whole afternoon off of work and you didn't prepare anything. A lot of people think that that's a cool way to start out your talk. I didn't really prepare anything, even though they did. Don't ever do that. And the last thing I'll say is don't look at a speaker and try to imitate their style. Again, be you. Be amazing, brilliant you. The people who are in your audience came to you because they have an ancient contract for many lifetimes, most likely, that you are the one who is supposed to deeply touch their lives. And all they want from you is for you to be honest and share from your heart.